Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank
Gaffney. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. One of the people who chronicles it as well as anybody and who is actually helping shape the battlefields through his reporting is our first guest, Rowan Scarborough. He is a journalist of great accomplishment, now with Human Events and the Washington Times. He is the author of Rumsfeld's War, The Untold Story of America's Anti-Terrorist Commander, and his most recent book is Sabotage, America's Enemies Within the CIA. We want to come to that in a moment with you, but welcome back, Rowan. It's good to have you with us.
Oh, good to be with you, Frank.
You have been doing some superb reporting on several of the issues that are very much on our minds, Rowan, and I'd like to go through with you a couple of them. Talk to us about some of the latest indications that this idea of somehow providing full equality for women in the military is not going to work out quite as Leon Panetta had planned unless they change the standards. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, it's clear, Frank, that the Pentagon wants the standards to be lowered. I think the remark from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, who told reporters if the standards are too high for women to get into a particular combat job, then the services better have a good reason for why that standard should not be lowered so they come in. That's the message out to the troops. That we know that we're going to have to lower standards to get women in. And my latest reporting on this came with I acquired two reports, one from one of the best manpower experts in town. He works at the Congressional Research Service, and he wrote a confidential paper to some members of Congress. He looked at all the data on physical injuries and strength tests, things like that, and he concluded that very few women will be able to get through basic Army infantry school unless the standards are lowered. They won't be able to carry as much. They won't be able to march as far. They won't be able to lift the shell as heavy as they need to be. And so that the only way it's going to work in the Pentagon's image, and they want significant amount of women to get in there, is if you lower the standards. And secondly, I acquired a Marine Corps internal memo that talked about how they're going to try to identify the next G.I. Jane. They're doing an experiment with men and women side by side to see what they can lift, how far they can run, how far they can march, and then see if they can identify the type of woman that can get through Marine Corps infantry school. Now, we know that the Corps found two volunteers to try their officer infantry school, which is very, very tough. They call it school, but it's not a school. Let me tell you, it's very physically demanding. Both women did not get through the first week. So that tells you right there.
Let me ask you, Rowan Scarborough, because I think for many of us who don't have firsthand experience with the military, this bit about standards doesn't necessarily resonate. And I guess what I'm interested in is when you talk about an inability to lift shells, for example, or to throw grenades sufficiently far that the thrower isn't within the kill radius of the grenade. These are things that have very practical implications on the battlefield and may, in fact, be the difference between life and death, not just for the individuals involved, but for their comrades. How is the military grappling with that reality? Are they now so politically correct, if I can use that expression, that even they are not going to be concerned about those realities?
Well, that's the word, grappling. They are grappling. They don't have their arms around this yet, exactly how they're going to do it. But by May, they have to submit a plan to Secretary Hagel on just what combat jobs, what are called MOSs, will be open to women and which ones will remain closed, and they're going to have to state the reason why. So they're going to have to actually test women's capability to, say, lift a comrade up put that comrade over their shoulder and carry that comrade to safety, or get them out of a building that they've assaulted and they have a wounded comrade and they need to get him out of there. They're going to have to be able to do that just like the guys can do that.
Yep. Or people die, for sure. Listen, Rowan, let me switch gears on you. The story that you had above the fold yesterday in the Washington Times was no less troubling, and that is that we have been understating, the government has, it appears, some of the attacks known as green-on-blue attacks. It's a kind of euphemism that makes this pretty antiseptic. This is describing acts of treachery on the part of Afghans who were training or otherwise helping to prepare to defend their country when we leave. What's up with that? And again, what are the implications?
Well, last year, so-called green-on-blue or insider attacks started to spike in 2011. The Taliban belatedly, and I'm glad it's belatedly, decided that was a great tactic. I mean, they were relying a lot on ambushes and buried explosives. But somehow they settled on the idea of if we can find turncoats within the ranks and have them just turn their guns on the Americans, that's a very, very effective psychological tool to bring down morale. Well, the command then put in a number of safeguards. Better screening was the focus of it. And when I got the final numbers for 2012, there were new safeguards, but they didn't work, at least initially, because the number of attacks went from 20 to almost 50. So they more than doubled, and 61 NATO, mostly American troops, were killed. So we don't know yet how 2013 is going to go, because the so-called fighting season kicks off around May, and that's when the Taliban unleashes all the horrible ideas and tactics that they have to try to take back territory or kill Americans. So hopefully it's off to a slow start, the number of insider attacks. But if it rises to the level of 2012, this is not good for being able to win over the villagers who know that we're leaving. And if they see how easy it is for these forces to be infiltrated by traitors, I mean, why are they going to trust the local Afghans once we leave these villages? So that's the implication of this.
Right. It's a very ominous thing, especially, as you say, Rowan, because it does have such a bearing on morale. We're, of course, fascinated by what is happening with the new Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel. You had a piece in the Times on the 28th of February of the role that the senior military brass is playing as a solid ally of President Obama and political Washington. Give us a quick report on that, if you would, Rowan Scarborough.
Well, their fates have really become tied in sequestration, because Obama is out there scaring everybody about national defense, maybe rightly, and they're putting all sorts of documents on the Hill, and no one is spinning any more intently than the four chiefs of the military services. They are putting reams of briefings, charts, videos over to Capitol Hill, showing everything that's going to go wrong under sequestration, right down to individual congressional districts, military construction, job losses, things like that. So the chiefs are all in on this White House campaign, to paint sequestration as the worst thing that has ever happened to the military. And some staffers on the Hill who sympathize with the military, who thinks sequestration is not the right way, to pare down defense spending if you have to do it, still are taken aback and somewhat offended by this constant PR campaign from the Pentagon, right down to job losses and construction losses. So and some of the chiefs have even weighed in to back Obama's gun control initiatives. So The chiefs, have become very compliant with this White House in what the White House wants to convey to the American people. So that was sort of the point of the story. And I think the Women in Combat underscores that, where General Dempsey is more than willing to put out an edict that, standards will have to come down if women can't reach them. I mean, that's about as a political statement as you get, and that shows you his commitment to the White House's social agenda at the Pentagon.
Indeed it does. Rowan Scarborough, we have to leave it at that. I think I'm more concerned about the compliance of the chiefs and other senior military brass with some of the social agenda than I am with them warning about what I think are probably going to be very real and dire implications of the cuts to the Defense Department. But I know we can count on you to be monitoring both and going intrepidly where few other reporters go in talking about the political correctness that is now, I'm afraid, leaching into our military. Keep up the good work, my friend. We'll look forward to talking with you again very soon. Next up, another very, very courageous reporter, Adam Credo from the Washington Free Beacon, joins us. We'll be getting his take on John Brennan's nomination and much more straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.